The wheels. It was because of my pleurisy I was being sent to Uncle John, who lived in Calgary, Alberta. Up till 1905, Alberta had been part of the Great Northwest Territory, and it gave me a real thrill to go to a place that had been officially civilized for only 2 years. My mother had her doubts about letting me go into such a wilderness. We looked it up on a map of North America, and Alberta seemed awfully empty. Our part of the country, which was Boston, was covered with winding black lines, meaning roads, and barbed wire lines, meaning railroads, and circles of all sizes, meaning cities and towns. It was so crowded with these proofs of civilization that there was no room for the names, which were stuck out in the Atlantic Ocean. In Alberta, there was none of this reassuring confusion. A couple of thin blue rivers, a couple of crooked lakes, and the mapmaker was through. My mother found the circle that was Calgary and carefully compared it with the circles of Massachusetts. "A fine black dot it is, but not to be mentioned in the same breath with Boston," she said. Boston was a very distinctive city on our map, being a large dot with a ring around it. "And you'll bear in mind, Catherine Mary," she added, "that's as far north as I want you to go. Don't be letting your uncle take you up into this." She waved in the general direction of Mackenzie and the North Pole. "My own mother lived and died in the house where she was born, and all the travelling she did was to the oatfield and back." We both sat and wondered at the size of the world until she folded it up and put it in the bureau drawer. However, the doctor said the cold, dry climate of Alberta would be good for my lungs, and Uncle John said it was a long, long time since he had seen one of his kin, and so at last my mother gave in and let me go. She put me on the train in Boston, and for the 20th time I promised I'd dress warm and keep dry and not go out into the night where there were bears. "Now, there's a lot of snow up in those north places," Mother cautioned me. "And you'll always remember to wear your woolen socks. And when there's a cold wind blowing, on with your shawl and button up." "Yes, Mother," I said. She kissed me, smiled and cried, and the train pulled out. Now here I was in one of those north places, and the old Scotsman was calling to me from across the aisle. One of the trainmen had wiped off the frost from his window. The Scotsman pointed, and there, against the stock fence along the right-of-way, were hundreds of cows and steers, blown across the prairies by that icy gale, and packed densely along the fence, frozen and dead. There was frost all over the window, except in the corner where I'd scratched a clear space to look out, and except for "Catherine Mary O'Fallon" printed underneath, and except for where I'd drawn Juno's ears. Just then the train gave a jerk and started slowing down, making twice as much noise as when it went fast. They always do, and I can't figure out why. I'd put Juno in the big lunch basket Mother had given me. I had to keep him in there during the day because dogs were supposed to be kept in the baggage car, and there was a mean porter on this train. Juno was the worry of my life. He had broken a strand of wicker, and I was always in terror that he'd stick that black nose of his out the hole. The train was just about stopped now. I thought maybe it was another snowplow come to clear off the tracks, so I looked out. There wasn't much to see. Snow on top of everything and not too many trees. There was a red silo and a house, and I was glad I didn't live there. The basket with Juno in it started moving around in a very un-basket-like way. It finally fell off the seat and started rolling toward the aisle. I grabbed it back fast, opened the lid, and gave Juno a couple of slaps on the nose. This Juno wasn't like Mother's Juno. He was only a puppy and couldn't be expected to be as wise and smart yet. All our dogs were named Juno, and they were mostly cocker and black. The Irish Juno, who had come to America with us, had been red. I didn't remember that one because I was only 2 then. The first Juno I remember was the white and brown one, the one that howled when Uncle Martin played the violin. Uncle had his violin and his bagpipe, the Irish kind, from Denny Lannan, the great storyteller, whose great-grandniece I am.